Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Now, Amy Markscore's Chris Ronji on KMOX.
What's up, guys? What's up, Amy Markscore? What's up,
people
me?
People were introducing themselves to you. It's so good to have you back, Chris Ronji.
I was gone for like 3 days. We had an off day because of the new year.
Mm-hmm.
I was gone Thursday, Friday. Was out Monday.
Well,
I was back
people
yesterday.
People are thrilled to death.
Well, whatever. Here we go. Let's have a great day today.
I'm ready.
Let's do it. Amy, Chris, Matt Pajeski producing the show today as always. We have a phone number. Want to use it? 314-436-7900. Call it, text it. We have an awesome streaming service. It's called Odyssey. And if you download the app, you can listen to the show like everywhere. Put it on your phone. You can take it with you. It's totally free. And you can leave us a voice message directly from it. If you like the terrestrial radio stuff, give 98.7 FM a try. See if you can pick it up wherever you are. If you can't, you know, the old trusty 1120 AM is always there for you.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Thousands of people have been forced to flee their homes as multiple wildfires are raging in the Los Angeles area. Thousands of acres have been affected.
And former St. Louis Circuit Attorney, well, remember her, Kim Gardner, the state auditor has released that long-awaited audit, and taxpayers should be outraged. Misuse of funds. It's insane. We will talk with Missouri State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick later on this morning.
Minnesota beats. They come back and they beat the Blues last night. SLU basketball will play tonight against the Bonnies. That'll get started at 7 o'clock. The broadcast here on KMOX at 6:45. So, yeah, you mentioned the Kim Gardner thing. I think you and I, we should, let's do it Friday. Let's have a chili cook-off.
I think that fixes things.
It
does. Look, I think a chili cook-off will rectify any situation. Now, even if you are on a rocket ship to hell, make a chili cook-off with the people on the rocket ship with you. You'll be fine.
See, Amy, I was just having this thought because I like chili. I like a good chili cook-off. Mm-hmm. I think they're great. Mm-hmm. You get all different kinds of samples, and people like to display their skills. I was just saying it just to say it. Why do you think we should do it?
I'm saying it because guess what, ladies and gentlemen? As Kim Gardner failed to do her job, as she spent her time, hundreds of hours, getting an unrelated nursing education while the circuit attorney's office, quote, was burning to the ground, she would occasionally swing by the circuit attorney's office and say, okay, even though I have misused $50,000 without permission, even though I have misused another $60,000 for unapproved uses and funds, and even though I'm losing all of my attorneys with like 120% turnover rate, even though it's taken me twice as long as every other office to clear a case, I think we can fix all of this with a chili cook-off. That's what the circuit attorney did.
So there was at one point $5,100, almost $5,200 spent at a bar and grill, almost $2,600 in pizza. All of it was to boost morale. Now, I know that we sometimes have pizza parties here at the office, and usually it's to boost morale, but I think things here run a whole lot smoothly.
Whoa.
What are you talking about?
No, it's great. We are finely tuned machine.
No, I think, look, pretty much any office you work in, there are always going to be issues and whatnot. Some clearly run better than others. And I don't mind the idea of taking care of employees every now and then if morale is low to just say, hey, here's a little thank you. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I don't know. This one does not sit well just because it's a taxpayer thing, just because it's an office that was not doing the job it is there to do. The number one job it was there to do is to prosecute crimes. And there was such a backlog of it. And I feel bad, honestly, for a lot of people who work in the office, because I believe many of them were trying to do right. They're trying to do right by the city. They were trying to perform the work. But when you're terribly understaffed and it doesn't feel like you have any support, a $3,000 pizza party is not going to do it.
Yeah, well, she also maintained, according to the audit, a contingency bank account outside the city's treasury. That violates state law. Money, which is supposed to be used to help prosecute cases with things like transporting out-of-state witnesses, was instead used on things like, as you mentioned, party rentals, a Sam's Club membership, and paying Gardner's personal legal fees. Okay, part of this is a massive SNL joke of just incompetence, making fun of someone who was negligent beyond belief, where you actually have to try to be such a horrible circuit attorney. She wasn't just swamped. She was actively getting an education in a completely unrelated field and abandoning her office. She lost her supporters. Most importantly, you had people who were victims of crimes and high profile homicides. And those cases were just sitting there for days and days and weeks and months on end. Remember, famously, a judge at the time said Gardner was the captain of a, quote, rudderless ship of chaos, which is a great way to put it. Some of her defenders said, well, remember, she went after Greitens. Yeah, so incompetently that she bungled the case against Greitens. She lied, committed perjury in the case against Greitens. She had to be reprimanded by the Missouri Supreme Court because of the way she handled the case against Greitens. She should have lost her license. I mean, Kim Gardner is a horrible person. Like, just on every level, I can't comprehend somebody behaving in the way she behaves. It blows my mind.
I'm not going to say she is a horrible
person. Well,
you're welcome to. I'm not going to say that she's a horrible person at her core, because
though?
I don't know her. I don't know what she's like.
But
I know what she's like under her job.
She's running the circuit attorney's office and she's taking classes at nursing, and people who are counting on her to give them justice.
Amy, you're more than welcome to think she is a horrible person at her core. I do not know her to be. What I do know is that she's not good at this job. She wasn't cut out for this job, and she's no longer in it, which is great. So now it's time for us to move forward, because we have somebody who appears to be pretty good at the job in Gabriel Gore. And I know he wasn't necessarily happy about the audit, didn't think the state had the authority to do it. But of course, they're going to comply with it as much as they can. But he doesn't run the office, from all appearances, in the same way she does. So at least on that front, it feels like the city of St. Louis is moving in the right direction as it pertains to the prosecutor's office. So I think, I mean, to me, I'm thankful that he is in charge. And this is a governor's appointee. Mm-hmm. You know, Governor Parson is the one who chose him. And I think we should feel good about the direction that department is headed. What is it going to mean in 5 years? I don't know. But right now, I think there's progress, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, no, and that's not the point I was making. I mean, we're 100% having progress. I think what's amazing, as more and more information comes out, official information, whether it's the reprimand years ago of the Missouri Supreme Court about her conduct, whether it's the people we talked to who worked in her office and supported her and were appalled and shocked and disheartened by her personal conduct and the way she handled things, the way she just was, I would argue, criminally negligent in her job as the circuit attorney. And now we have the audit where she was stealing money. You know, if you're misusing taxpayer money, you're stealing the taxpayer's money. You're using it for things you shouldn't be using it for. To me, if we can say, well, we really, you know, Ted Cruz is a bad guy, or that, you know, in Jefferson City, there's a Mike Moon, he's a bad guy, I have no problem saying all of the information is in front of us that Kim Gardner's not a good person. You can't
be a good
person.
What was Mike Moon's infraction? He said he should be able to marry a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
But that's a bad thing, and so is stealing from taxpayers and perjury.
I mean, I'm not putting them on the same level, but okay. That's perfectly fine. You're welcome to have that opinion. That's Amy Markscores. I'm Chris Ranji. You are welcome to let us know what you think. 314-436-7900. Again, that voice message feature on the Odyssey app is really good. You should drop us one, record it, and send it to us, and you might get to hear it on the air. Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Well, yesterday, the St. Louis County Council held its first meeting of the year. It also swore in two new members. A couple of things, Ranj, I think worth noting. One of the first orders of business, the council did call to draft legislation that would give the council the ability to remove county department heads. Here's the thing, that could apply to the county executive. The new legislation, it would require a change in the St. Louis County Charter, so that would have to be a vote. Also, the county council appointed Councilwoman Rita Herdays as chair and Councilman Dennis Hancock as vice chair, even while the litigation of nepotism is pending. And the one thing the council did approve was a call for the audit of the prosecutor's office, meaning Wesley Bell's office, the way he ran it, and Melissa Price Smith, the new prosecutor, is in favor of that audit.
Yeah, you know, just real quick, I want to say this about the appointment of Price Smith. Seems like a good one. You know, we were just talking about the appointment that Governor Parson made of the circuit attorney in St. Louis. Gabriel Gore seems to be a pretty good one. Again, not in the office, but people that we have spoken to and people who work there seem to think he's got things on the right track. This person, Price Smith, is taking the job. You know, isn't really on it yet, but it is a, it seems like a good pick. At least she's saying the right things.
Yeah.
You know, no. she's saying the right thing. She's saying that she doesn't want politics to be involved in the office. She just wants to do the job. She knows there's a lot of work to be done. Those seem like two pretty good picks.
Yeah. And I like her experience that she has in that office.
Yeah.
I know Wesley Bell had not named anybody that he would want, but he had mentioned like having someone from within the office would be great, which I think makes
sense. Someone with a little institutional knowledge.
Right. It gets how it works. She had been there for decades. She sounds, her resume was pretty impressive.
It's
good. I don't know how you go. I personally would have such a hard time every day seeing some of the cases that she had to prosecute, like, you know, sexual assault cases against kids, pedophiles, violence. That, I mean, you got to be a special person to be able to take that in and go, okay, we're going to prosecute these guys without just losing your mind.
You know, being an attorney, we give lawyers a hard time and, you know, make fun of them for being ambulance chasers, which isn't true of all of them, of course. There are some who do that kind of work, and that's fine. You know, it's a profession.
I think that's what I would do.
Just be an ambulance chaser?
Yes, it's the only thing I can do.
Just where are you going? Is that where the sign behind the ambulance says, do not follow?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I never thought about that.
Do they think it's for the lawyers who are ambulance chasers?
You know what? I never realized that might be for the lawyers.
I think it has to
be. At any rate, I just say that because emotionally,
yeah, no,
I couldn't handle.
Well, that's what I was going to say is it's not easy work. To be a defense attorney, too, when you sometimes have to defend people who have done terrible things and you know they've done terrible things, but that's the system that we have agreed we need.
Mm-hmm.
One where everybody is afforded a defense, even if it is clear you are guilty. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you do that work either.
Like a, I mean, the school shooters, you know, have
they have
our system.
A
you have to have a defense. And I'm so glad we have a trial by jury. You have a defense, you have a prosecution. I mean, you know what you're getting into when you're a defense lawyer.
Right.
But
and it could be lucrative.
I could not. I don't know how you do it.
I don't know either.
Do you try very hard?
No, well, I don't think you want that either. You want to be good sometimes and win or nobody's going to come to you.
I would just be like, well, I'm not going to try super hard on this one. Like, I don't know what to tell you, Judge.
But also nobody is forcing you to take cases.
Yeah.
Unless you're a public
defender,
you're assigned then and you sort of have to.
Yeah.
But I commend anybody who does work like that, whether you're a prosecutor, defense attorney, public defender.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. I totally
the only
commend
one
that.
I could. Yeah. The only one I could do, I'd be on the billboards like the Jungle Law. Like, hey,
with a
swinging,
phone,
swinging from a vine.
You got to have a phone number with all the same digit.
555555.
Yeah, it's got to be easy to remember.
Are you the lawyer that swings on the vine? I am. It's a jungle out there, folks.
I would, if I was an attorney, I would absolutely have my face in a tie jacket on a billboard.
Could we be in the same law firm and you're in a tie and I'm swinging from a vine?
Behind me?
Yes.
I don't.
People would be like, I don't get the vibe of that law
Dude,
firm.
I love it. I would know this. I would have a Saul Goodman, just completely outrageous demeanor if I were an attorney.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I'd wear bright suits.
Monochrome?
Maybe.
Like all red, all yeah. purple, all blue, all yellow, just.
No, I would go for the monochrome, but the different color collar.
Oh, yeah.
The Robert Kraft. That's what I would do.
I am not a huge fan of that. That was what the Ken dolls wore in the 80s. You know, you had Barbie and Ken, the original Ken. And people, of course, people know about the Ken. But I mean, there's a very specific, there was a, build a life with Ken Barbie. I don't know. They had kids. And the Ken doll.
Build a life with Ken Barbie. I think that's exactly what it's called.
I didn't play a lot of Barbies. But Ken had the different color collar from the shirt and his tie. I'm not a big fan of that look. It's a little kitschy.
It's a little 80s
power
suit kind of look.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Not. Would you do the bold patterns suit?
Absolutely. Definitely. Not all of them, but some of them
I think on a long case, you should start with a small, like tight pattern, like a plaid, like grid, and as you got deeper into the case, your plaid, the pattern keeps getting bigger.
Yeah.
So it's a buffalo print by
until
the
it's just one big check.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I will say, in all seriousness, so Rita Hurd Days, who again is the councilwoman who was appointed along with Dennis Hancock, she said, quote, with referring to the new legislation that would allow council members to remove county department's head. She said, quote, this started really with the directors and how they approached this council, the disrespect that they had for us, not answering our questions, and flat out honestly lying to us about that. So the relationship between the county council and the varying department heads, not great, it sounds like, but this legislation could potentially give the council the ability to remove the county executive, Sam Page. And this county council is not a friendly council towards Sam Page.
Yeah,
alienated himself.
Yeah, it seems to have gotten less and less friendly toward him over the last several months even.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is something we'll continue to follow. Ronj, I did want to go back to a bit of our conversation with Connor Kerrigan, the director of communications for the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
That conversation we had with him, a lot to take in about
yesterday
about the St. Louis Business Journal article. They called it the traveling mayor. She had taken 64 work trips in 42 months in her job. And he did say that the mayor runs the city even when she's gone. She runs the city remotely like she did during COVID and said, you know, Mayor Crewson ran the city remotely during COVID. That's what they did. My question is, wasn't that kind of considered less than ideal, though? Running the city remotely? I mean, you know what I mean? More and more businesses are going back to in-person. There's a strong argument to make for being in the building and not being remote. I'm okay with it for a few times, but I feel like it's not ideal to say, well, that's what we did during COVID and it worked.
Well, I would say this. If, in fact, all of these trips, or I don't think he said every single one, but almost all of them were meetings with mayors around the country trying to raise the profile of St. Louis nationwide. I don't know if it has any effect whatsoever. I would like to think there is some positive effect that comes from it. But if that is the goal, if that's what she's been doing, I have less of a problem with that because we talk about St. Louis all the time as one that is overlooked. And we don't want this city to be overlooked any longer because it does matter. I mean, we could do this isolationist thing and say it doesn't matter what people from Cincinnati think of us or people from New York think of us, but it kind of does. Because if the profile of your town is positive and people look at you in a good way, maybe they'll be willing to conduct business there someday. Maybe they won't completely overlook your city. So if that's what she's been trying to do, and that's what all these absences are, I really don't have a problem with that. If it were her just saying, I need to get away for a weekend, I'm leaving, I can't be here anymore, then that I would have a problem with.
Would you grant that there could be a happy medium between zero trips and 64 trips? I think people feel frustrated when certain, you know, the same city services we're talking about that people within the city are struggling with, whether it be trash or the potholes, or even, you know, having a mayor present while people are trying to get their kids to school and so forth.
Sure, but I don't know that. I'm not entirely sure that her being present in the city gets somebody's kid to school easier than if she is in Cincinnati for a mayor's conference and trying to tout St. Louis.
More of like in that more moment. Optics, you know what I mean? Support as a leadership position.
But again, if the goal is to raise the profile of the city and she's having any success at that, I would think that's a win. But again, I don't know if she's having any success at that. But the attempt is being made, right? At least that's what we're being told. So at any rate, St. Louis needs help. I think we would all agree that the city needs a lot of help in many different ways. There has been a lawsuit filed against St. Louis Public Schools, and Chester Asher, who is the founder of Coalition with STL Kids, is at the center of it. He'll join us next on KMOX. It's the Chris and Amy show on KMOX. Amy Markscores, Chris Ranji, good to have you with us this morning. Again, we hope you're listening on the Odyssey app, and you can drop us a voice message whenever you want to. We are going out to the guest line this morning to visit with Chester Asher, who is the founder of Coalition with STL Kids. And Chester is at the center of a lawsuit that has been filed against St. Louis Public Schools. And to talk about that with us, Mr. Asher joins the show. And by the way, we should mention ahead of time that the KMOX newsroom has reached out to St. Louis Public Schools to get a comment on this story. We have not heard back yet. But Mr. Asher, good to talk to you. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
So tell us what the lawsuit is about and why you filed it.
And so this school district has become infamous for chilling speech and violating First Amendment rights and violating the rights of anyone who dares criticize its performance. And what it's forgotten is that the school system is set up for children to educate and to nurture our children. And amidst their failures, people are allowed to speak up and are allowed to call people out and call board members out. I mean, this board has a specific policy that when you go to their board meetings, you are not allowed to use the names of any board member. That's crazy because they don't want to be associated with the criticism and the failure that they oversee, which is just ludicrous.
So what are your specific issues with the performance that you were trying to bring and you feel like you're being stifled?
So you have 79% of kids in St. Louis public schools cannot read on grade level. That's according to the State Board of Education. You have 92% of black kids cannot do math on grade level in SLPS. These are just crazy, unacceptable numbers. And this school district has really just tried to keep things quiet. And so amidst all the turmoil and the firing of the superintendent, I mean, and that's why they did that, because they really wanted to shift blame from themselves to the former superintendent. You know, they blamed her for spending that they literally approved. I was at one of the board meetings and I asked them, they had approved $450,000 in a no bid contract to an outside consultant. And 2 months later, the superintendent came back and asked him for another $150,000, and that board approved it unanimously. But then when it came to public light, you know, they had to fire Dr. Scarlett because she was so horrible and she was doing all these crazy things. You know, she was doing crazy things that the board approved, and that's why they also need to go.
The lawsuit also claims that SLPS policies discourage parental involvement. What are some of those policies that stifle parental involvement?
Oh, totally. And so, you know, they come late to those board meetings often. But if you come late as a parent, you can't sign up to speak. They sometimes leave early. But as a parent, if you leave early, you can't speak because they hold the public comment section at the end of the board meeting. So you have to be there at the beginning of the board meeting and then there at the end of the board meeting. So that's sometimes 4 hours. So as a parent who works a full job or maybe two jobs, and you come to a board meeting at 6:30 at night and you have to stay till 10 o'clock for you to have your voice heard, and almost always they never respond to parents. They say, oh, we're going to respond in writing. And almost always they never respond in writing either. And so that's just one example of how they really disenfranchise parents, don't encourage, don't put the systems in place to actually encourage any type of parental involvement. And oftentimes people blame parents. Oh, the reason that our schools are the way they are because of parents not doing a good job. But then when they come to the board meeting, sometimes they've been turned away. We were at one board meeting that they actually, because parents were there, because we brought parents out, and parents were outraged, and they said, oh, we're going into recess. They kicked all of the parents out, and once all the parents were out, they started the board meeting again without any parents in the audience.
What are you hoping to accomplish with the suit?
I really want to send a message to SLPS and President Tony Cousins, who was the one who had actually suspended me from board meetings because of my speech, that parents and teachers won't be silenced. And you know, we hear from a bunch of teachers all the time that, you know, they agree there's so many issues, but they are scared to speak out. And we have filed this suit on behalf of parents, on behalf of teachers who have been scared to speak out, and parents who have said that they're fearful that their kids will be retaliated against. And so we're filing this suit to say, you know, no more. Parents and teachers should not be scared. And whenever this district and Tony Cousins and this board violates our rights, we are going to sue to make sure that we have our rights respected.
Have you had kids in this school district? What prompted you to take this action and to attend these board meetings?
And so, you know, my children went to school in the county. You know, I went to a number of SLPS schools, and said, there is no way that I'm sending my children to schools where almost none of the kids are able to read. And you know, part of that is troublesome to me because I consider myself a social justice activist. So it's not okay that I'm able to just send my kids to a better school. But what about all the kids who are our neighbors and who are my kids' neighbors and who are their friends? Like, it's important that, and it's critical to me that we make sure that all children throughout the city have access to a high quality education. And that's part of the reason, you know, we're also fielding candidates to replace Tony Cousins, like Dr. Zach Davis, who's actually a teacher and actually moved into the city so that his daughter could attend SLPS, and Crystal Barnett, who organizes parents and actually sent her child to SLPS at one point and had to pull her out because it was doing so poorly.
So are you getting actual explicit support from other parents in this?
Oh, definitely. Totally. There are a bunch of parents. You know, we have a meeting this Thursday. We have a meeting next Thursday at SLU at 6 o'clock. You know, people can check at 6:30, actually. People can check our website, coalitionofstlkids.org, or our Facebook or Instagram, and get the details. And so, yeah, that we I would say most of our members are parents. We have a bunch of teachers also who are brave enough and who have talked specifically about the threats they've received about speaking out.
Do you know the number then of the, I guess it would be members of the Coalition for STL Kids, or the number of parents involved? Like, how big is it right now, this mass?
We have about 30 active members. I would say about 18, 20 of them are parents. And, you know, at some of our events, we've had, you know, up to 100 people come to our events. But we're about 30 strong in terms of the actual work and at actual meetings.
With your lawsuit. Go ahead.
And some of the things we're fighting for are, one, a starting 60, which is a minimum $60,000 starting salary for teachers. Teaching is the hardest job I've ever had, and it's also the lowest paying job I've ever had. And that's just a shameful statement for it to be true. We're fighting for parents and teachers to have behavior support. We know a big reason teachers leave is because there's sometimes outrageous behaviors in the classrooms, and there's just no one to deal with it. And we're fighting for a tutoring, that every child who's behind in literacy and behind in reading have access to a free tutor. I mean, it's not fair that as a more well-to-do parent, if your child is struggling, you can get them a tutor, but if your child is in a failing school district, you can't even get, and you can't afford a tutor, and they just have to struggle in that state. And we know there's a school to prison pipeline, and a lot of that starts with literacy. If you cannot read, your options are limited. And that's why we've been so adamant about replacing Tony Cousins and replacing the school board and speaking out so forcefully and consistently.
So your suit is against the district, the school board, and the board president, Tony Cousins. Do you have, and this is a lawsuit that's just been filed, is there any sort of timeline that you're working on here?
No. I mean, hopefully, the courts have their own timeline, so they'll take as long as they'll take. But, you know, honestly, we would like the board president to step down. And have a election even before April, when two other board members are up for or their seats become open. And so one of our slogans is, we can't wait, because the time is now. Really, the time is yesterday, because we know the impacts in our community. We know that illiteracy breeds violence. We know that illiteracy breeds poverty. We know that illiteracy breeds incarceration. And so the idea that this school board has just allowed the district to deteriorate in such a manner, and, you know, the state test scores just were recently released, and scores went down in both reading and math once again. This is just unacceptable.
Jester, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been involved with charter schools. I think you were in the process of opening a charter school. Is that still something that you're involved with, to give these students maybe more choices?
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm still working, in my spare time on opening Ali Academy, a social justice charter school. And really, our push for that charter school was that, why should kids have to suffer through a system that year after year, decade after decade, has not served them? You know, so many parents say, you know, the SLPS schools sucked when I went there, and they suck now for my child. Why does a parent who can't afford a better option have to be straddled with such a situation? It's not fair. It's not okay. And that's why, you know, I'm not a charter school proponent. I don't think charter schools are necessarily better, but I am a school choice proponent. I am a proponent of high quality, high performing schools, and parents having the option. If they say that, you know, this system is not serving my child, that I can move them. But in the meantime, we are fighting to make sure that SLPS, for the kids who are stuck in SLPS, we're fighting to make sure that is a system that honors them, that has high expectations for them, and that gives them the real life and academic skills to go to college and get real jobs that lift kids and families out of poverty.
Chester Asher, founder of Coalition with STL Kids, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
And by the way, Tony Cousins did last month refile to, you know, for re-election again. That election happens in April, and KMOX has reached out to St. Louis Public Schools for comment on this lawsuit. We have yet to hear back, but we, of course, will update you when we do. Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji, did you see this? Next.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Ranj, I don't know if this is in the weeds or if this is something that everybody will like, oh, yeah.
If this is coming from you.
Yeah, it's probably in the weeds.
Yeah. You listen to Supreme Court podcasts.
Nobody
listens to those.
Oh, my gosh. I went on a four-hour walk in the snow, Ranj, and listened to. It was a special hour and 48-minute.
You watched a county council meeting start to finish.
Not all the way yesterday. But anyway, origins of the federal constitution. Hour and 48 minutes. It was great. Okay. Anyway, Getty and Shutterstock images are merging. And I don't know why this is funny to me. Come on. Maybe it's because when I worked at the running store, I was the executive editor of the Fleet Feet newsletter.
That's probably
so.
It.
We sold a lot of socks, but you would Google, right, these Getty and Shutterstock images, and they're always hilarious of these like super attractive people just like laughing and running in the snow, not wearing the right clothes, and just looking at each other, or like the corporate America where it's just the generic gray suit and the lady with the headset on. They're funny. They're merging because they're trying to fight AI. I think they're like, guys, we got to fight AI images, and the only way for us to do this is if we merge. It was a $3.7 billion deal, and they're hoping that with the combined, the pooled resources, people will still go to Getty and Shutterstock.
Well, okay.
Is this in the weeds?
I don't think most people use photo services.
What about if you're in corporate America?
We use
America?
Getty here because we have a licensing thing with Getty Images that we can use certain ones. And
but I feel like I've seen this. I mean, my friend, sister has a business, another friend at a startup. My other friend works in corporate America. And even like building a deck for marketing, when you're building a PowerPoint deck, you use Shutterstock Images.
Yeah.
So maybe people will... Maybe they do know what I'm talking about.
I guess there's probably a few. If you know what Amy's talking about, let us know.
I was like, look at these guys. They're pulling their resources. It's like they used to be mortal enemies, and now they're like Bert and Ernie.
Mortal enemies. Yeah, there used to be actual battles.
You did not cross the picket line between Getty and Shutterstock.
Do you watch Abbott Elementary? I know you don't watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Well, here's the thing. With Instagram Reels, I see a little bit of everything. So I have seen Danny DeVito in Always Sunny.
Yes.
And because the whole chess scandal with the beads, that made it.
Shout out St. Louis.
I have not watched Abbott Elementary.
So I have seen bits. I'm the exact opposite. I have seen bits and pieces of Abbott Elementary. It looks funny. I probably should watch it. I did not realize they are in season... Or it's season 4, episode 9 of Abbott Elementary. There is going to be a crossover episode with the gang from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh my gosh. Like and Flintstones and Jetsons, when they used to cross over the Flintstones and Jetsons.
Like there was a, wasn't it Cheers and St. Elsewhere?
Really?
Didn't they do, like back in the 80s, they did a crossover, which just seems like a very mismatched crossover because they're both comedy shows. Mm-hmm. These two are. But they're very different comedies.
Yeah.
But Always Sunny is a little more edgy.
I thought it was super edgy, more like even the way it's shot is kind of like Arrested Development, right? More than...
Yes.
I thought Abbott Elementary was a bit more traditional.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little more traditional. Based on the clips that I have seen from the show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia would not be your kind of humor. It's not the kind of stuff that you would like. Anyway, episode 9, there's a character named Ava.
Okay.
And she announces that the school district is sending a group of volunteers to help out at Abbott, which is an elementary school. But, quote, things don't go as planned. So I'm assuming the gang is arriving to volunteer at a school. I think I will watch this episode, even though I really don't have a frame of reference for Abbott Elementary. But they win a lot of awards.
Yeah, they do.
It's supposed to be a really good show.
All right. Did you see this? This is really just a trivia for you, Ranj. Do you know who lives at 129 West 81st Street, apartment 5A? It is television.
Is it Jerry?
It is Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
It is Jerry Seinfeld. Do you know who lives at 0001 Cemetery Lane?
No.
The Addams Family.
Oh!
Yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah.
So this is it a story of addresses, famous addresses?
This was just fictional home addresses, and
oh, I love that.
It was a little game that they threw out there, fictional home addresses, because they said the real life Albuquerque home where Walter White lived in Breaking Bad is up for sale.
Oh, yes. And
yes.
So I have read about that house.
Uh-huh.
And of course they get visitors all the time. People are constantly driving by looking for the house.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if I would want to live in a home like that. We talked about the Home Alone house,
yeah,
which is in a Chicago suburb and just went for sale. I think it was last year and sold for about $5 million. And then the next door neighbor's house,
yeah,
the old man with the shovel, mm-hmm, his house is for sale too right now.
Well,
and I think it's something around $4 million.
The house of Walter White in Breaking Bad is going to be listed for $4 million, even though its Zestimate, which I guess is from a real
Zillow
estate,
maybe?
Yeah. It's only worth $350,000.
Oh.
But they said the home draws fans of the show from,
yep,
all over the world. And when producers were scoping out locations for the show, the home was owned by Fran and Louis Padilla, who had bought it in 1973. It's
really,
a 1,900 square foot house.
I don't think I'd like living in a house like that.
I also wouldn't want to
overpay. Strangers constantly coming by look at it.
Overpaying?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you feel like you could never walk in front of your windows without someone looking at you?
You know, I think I'd like to own it and then put it up on Airbnb. That might be a cool thing to do.
Well, for $4 million, you're going to have to book it a lot.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Meta, that is the company that oversees, owns Facebook and Instagram, they have decided to do away with fact-checking altogether. What does that mean for us? We'll discuss that when we come back on KMOX.